Hey, I want to thank Courage to Lead for sponsoring this month's podcast. Courage to Lead is led by a friend of mine and my personal coach, a guy by the name of Sean Lovejoy. He has been a real estate developer, a church planner, mega church pastor, and now the CEO of a fast-growing coaching and consulting organization. Sean's been a guest on the podcast, and I've gotten to know he and several of his coaches that help pastors and business leaders all across the country. And recently, I was invited to join their team to be one of their coaches. Listen, I've just learned this over time. You can only get so far on your own know-how and own intellect, wisdom, experience, and smarts. You need someone that can coach you and help you see the things that you cannot see. And Sean has done that for me, and their coaches have done that for countless leaders and pastors. And now I'd like to do that for you as well. So if you'd like to inquire about either me being your coach or receiving a coach, contact me at PastorRustyGeorge.com, and you can click the link there to find out more information. If you'd like to just go to Courage to Lead to find out more about what they do, you can go to CourageToLead.com, a great world-class coaching organization helping you build a killer team and grow your organization. I'm so excited to be a part of their organization, and I would love to meet you there. Thank you to Courage to Lead for all that you do for leaders and all that you've done for me. Following Jesus isn't always easy, but it's not complicated. Join us each week as we work to make faith simple. This is Simple Faith. Hey, welcome to Simple Faith. Great to have you with us. Today we have a returning guest with us. It's baseball season, so we thought we'd bring back one of our favorite scouts. We've had a few on the show before, but Kevin Burrell always brings the good stuff to us. Here's a guy that works in a great industry that is high-powered, but also filled with a lot of guys that are realizing they've searched and searched for success in one area, only to find it doesn't fully satisfy. So whether you like baseball or not, I know you're going to get something out of what Kevin has to say, because what do you do when you're helping coach people or maybe just lead your own family or kids and they're pursuing one thing, but you know it's not going to bring them the fulfillment that they want? How do you help people in that? How do you help yourself in that? Kevin's going to be so helpful to us in understanding that. So excited to have back to the show my friend Kevin Burrell. Well, Kevin Burrell, thank you so much for being back on the podcast. At the time we're recording this, we're winding down in spring training, getting ready for the beginning of the season. So for our new listeners, tell everybody just who you are in a nutshell and what it is you do.
Well, my name is Kevin Burrell, and I'm an area scouting supervisor for the Chicago White Sox. I cover the state of Georgia, South Carolina, and Jacksonville, Florida. And this is my 33rd year in scouting. And so it's always been a fun time, and it's a grind as well. So just keeping the pedal to the metal, certainly during the scouting season.
33 years, my goodness, you have seen a lot of changes in the game of baseball. I mean, that's living through the steroid era. And all the craziness of that and the rule changes over the last few years. I'm curious, when you look at players today versus what you would look for back then, I mean, obviously you're looking for the five-tool basics, but is there anything that you're looking at differently now? Has analytics changed all that? Or when you go out to a high school baseball park, do you still look for the same things?
Yeah, I think as a scout, you're always trying to scout in the utopia. So you're still evaluating those five tools, the hit and power, run, throw, and field. However, the analytics and the indoctrination of analytics now today, it really adds a different piece to it. I've learned over the years more analytics, and it's been a good thing. It's been a valuable thing to learn. But it's not a be all end all to the evaluation of scouting. It's just another piece of it. Mm-hmm. So our organization, which is a good thing, they really ask us scouts to, you know, not lose the evaluation with the eyes. But the analytics do come into play, and they enhance, you know, the three legs of a player, and just, you know, what type of makeup a kid has, his competitiveness, how the numbers and the analytics line up, and then how his physical tools line up. So those three legs are really important in the total evaluation of the player.
You know, I heard somebody say one time when, I think it was Marty Lamb on this podcast, he says, I tend to watch them more in the dugout than I even do on the field. I want to know how they interact with their, you know, players and their teammates, coaches, and all that. So is that true for you as well? Is there anything that you're looking for that beyond just how they perform on the field?
It is. It's, you know, when I met with a player, and I'm going back a few years, I met with a player during the off season, and he was a prospect I had interest in. And, you know, I go over a list of about 40 questions with these guys and meet with them either face-to-face or through video. And in evaluating this one particular prospect, he was a pitcher. And so he came off the field and, you know, he was obviously tired and had been pitching quite a time out there already. But this guy went over to the, I watched him in the dugout. He went over to the cooler, the water cooler, and he poured a glass of water and had a towel, and he walked it down to the end of the bench to one of his teammates that had just came off the field, an infielder. And he gave that infielder a cup of water and a towel. And that told me right there a lot about what type of teammate this young man was.
Wow.
And what type of heart he had to serve his teammates.
That's big.
That it wasn't just about himself, because naturally he was tired and he was hot and sweaty. Somebody should have been serving him, but he flipped the script and walked down to the end of the dugout and brought that guy a cup of water and a towel to help his teammate.
That's great. Well, I know that you you work with a lot of Christian athletes. You work with a lot of Christian coaches and managers. You're part of some great Zoom call Bible studies with a bunch of managers and scouts and just great guys. Is there a way you encourage an athlete that might be different than the way you encourage somebody perhaps at a different type of job? Are there texts that you send to each other? Are there verses you share with each other that encourage an athlete or a coach? I'm just thinking about the people out there that are Christians that are coaching a little league team or even a high school baseball team or even another sport. You know, is there certain things that you've found, boy, this really helps them and encourages them in their faith and in their practice?
When these players, the athletes, that is, you know, they have a lot to what they're facing nowadays, especially these high-profile guys with social media and so many publications, and everything is, you know, finally evaluated and looked at and nitpicked over. And so, you know, if I know the player and I know him well and know his background with his faith and have a good relationship with him, you know, maybe he had a tough game. Maybe he had a tough game on the mound or at the plate. So I will certainly text them or even sometimes call them and just offer a word of encouragement to them to just keep grinding forward. Hey, Roger Clemens had bad games and Nolan Ryan had bad games, so they're destined to have bad games. So I just try to sometimes I've left them, I prayed with them, you know, especially the guys that I know them well, you know, I prayed for them, and it's very appreciated on their side. So yeah, it's just a time, because we live in this society now where these guys are under a bubble, and you know, they're trying to make progress, not live in this perfect world. And so yeah, I just try to help them and encourage them, especially if I know them well.
I think we forget that sometimes, in many cases, these players that you're dealing with are young adults. They're in their early to late 20s. They're dealing with all the kind of things that an average 25-year-old's dealing with. with the added pressure of making millions of dollars, or the desire to make millions of dollars, or to make a roster, or, you know, perform well, and social media on top of that, and constantly being scrutinized. All the mental health statistics tell us that people are getting more and more nervous, anxious, depressed. Do you see that in your line of work as well? And are there things that are helpful for players, whether it's, hey, get off of social media, or don't read the press, as they used to say, that kind of help an athlete kind of get out of their own way?
Yeah, I see a lot of that nowadays, especially in the culture we live in with these guys. So these young high school athletes, or even college athletes, they're kids. Mm-hmm. And so they're 17, 18, 19-year-old high school kids. And, you know, in college, they're 21 and 22 years old, 23 years old. So, but they live in this bubble. They live with a microscope on them. And especially the more high-profile guys, the money's so big now. And it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot what they have to endure and what they have to process. So I take the approach to them that, look, you're just human, man. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail. I'm on your side. I'm pulling for you. You know, at least one scout that's there for you to try to help you. I'm always here for you if you need me, and just try to approach it that way.
Hmm. What a great piece of advice for all of our coaches out there helping, you know, young kids just play the game. Okay, let me ask you this, because there are people out there that are Christians, and they're coaching a baseball team, or they're even leading at work in a normal 9-to-5 job, and they're Christians, but they would love to share their faith with coworkers, or in your case, with fellow athletes that aren't Christians, but that kind of gets into an interesting area there. How do you encourage managers or even players to share their faith with others without overstepping their bounds?
Well, I'll just take my profession. So with coaches, you know, I felt like a few years ago, a handful of years ago, there was a real need for coaches to be able to leverage their influence as a coach. Mm. And so because, as Billy Graham, I think, once said, you know, a coach is going to influence more people in 1 year than the average person will in a lifetime. Mm. So they have a great amount of influence. They really, a lot of them don't know how to leverage that influence. They don't know the power of their influence. So, you know, there was a need, I felt like, some years ago, about 5 years ago. And so basically myself and another pastor and a couple guys, we just started an online Zoom weekly Bible study discussion discipleship group, really for coaches, mm-hmm. baseball coaches. And you know, we started with just a handful of guys, of 4 or 5 guys, and then you know, it's developed into 95 to 100 guys every week that are on here. And so, you know, we try to teach them and train them and help them develop these skills to be able to live out their faith and be able to share Christ and be able to be bold about it, you know, and live it out, how to live it out. You know, what are some steps to that? What does that look like for them as a coach? So, it's really important that, you know, and we challenge these guys to do that, you know, as an influential coach.
Have there been some coaches in your past, or even some books that you've read, or some people that you've learned from that you don't even know, that have influenced you over the years that you could share with us?
Yeah, I mean, not too many, honestly, quite honestly, not too many Christian coaches that I've really had that really took that step or that took that stand. I will say there was a book that I read several years ago, and it was a powerful, one of the best leadership books I've read. It was called Leading for God's Sake, Lead for God's Sake.
That's a great book.
So yeah, it is a great book, just really about the heart of a coach, what that should look like. Do you coach with the heart, or do you coach with a hatchet? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how you lead. So that was a really, really good book just to read and go through. But really, for me personally, I didn't really understand the influence I had as a scout until I really learned how to become a disciple, quite honestly. I knew that being a disciple was important. I had no idea how to be one. And so I never understood how to make a disciple. When I finally grasped and understood that, you know, I am just a scout. That's what I am. It's what I do. But I'm a minister in disguise as a scout. That's the way I try to put it. And so I try to teach these coaches or even teach these athletes that, look, if you're a Christian, you're a minister first in disguise as an athlete or in disguise as a coach. That's what you do. And how you leverage that and how you, your methodology of implementing that and being an influence to others around you, there's different ways to that. There's different methods to that. But at the end of the day, that's what you are. You're a kingdom building coach or you're a kingdom building athlete. And so for me, that was a big turning point in my life, personally for me, because I really never understood how to be a disciple. I knew it was important to be a disciple. I didn't know how to. And so that really helped me in my personal life.
Hey, let me interrupt this podcast to just remind you about CourageToLead.com. A great organization that is helping leaders build killer teams. And I'm happy to announce that I am now part of their organization, helping pastors and business leaders. If you'd like to learn more about me being your coach or finding a different coach, just check it out at my website, PastorRustyGeorge.com, for more information. All right, back to the show. I love that you went there, and I'd love to ask you how you would define that, because I think we all say similar things when it comes to what a disciple is, but I'm always curious to hear how people sum it up, because it often helps clarity for a lot of us. When you're explaining to a player who's, you know, a person of faith, but yet they're not necessarily living it out, how do you define a disciple? How do you communicate that to somebody, especially somebody in baseball?
For me, the way I define it is simply the fruits of the Spirit. So it's talking about the character of Christ. The character of Christ was the nine fruits of the Spirit. So, you know, how am I living out my character every day out here? Am I showing love? Do I have joy? Do I have peace? Do I have gentleness? Do I have kindness? Do I have faithfulness? Do I have self-control? I mean, all these fruits of the Spirit, that is the character of Christ. And so that's the way I like to look at myself, and I'm evaluating myself daily. Hey, how am I doing in this area? I feel like I got these nine plates spinning, and this one down here might be wobbling. This one might be here at a high speed, and I need to pay attention to all of those nine plates. And so I'm constantly evaluating myself on those nine fruits of the Spirit, which are the character of Christ. It was the character of Christ. It is the character of Christ.
I love that.
Then the conduct of Christ, you know, is how he lived his life out. You know, he was a good manager. He was a good steward. He prioritized the message. He prioritized large group and small group. There's so many areas of his life that was the daily conduct, the way he lived out his life. So I have a grid I keep in my phone of these seven attributes of conduct, and how am I living those out in my personal life, and how am I living those out in my scouting and professional life?
Could you share that with us? What's on that grid?
Sure.
I love this, because I think a lot of us tend to look at items like you just mentioned, whether it's these seven conduct checkpoints or even the fruit of the Spirit, we look at it like it's a personality test, where we say, oh yeah, I'm this is who I am, but I'm not these others. In other words, I'm really good with self-control, but I'm not really good with kindness or whatever. And it's not really kind of a pick and choose thing, right? It's not a buffet.
It exactly. And let me pull it up here. So this is the way I try to Can you see me okay?
Still? I can, yeah. Okay.
This is the way I try to look at it, and that just from the conduct of Christ, and how am I, this grid that I live by. So one is a member. Am I belonging to my local church? Do I belong to a local church?
That's good.
Do I make that a priority? For a second one is a magnifier. How am I doing in spending time worshiping God in private and in public? And thirdly is a minister. Am I meeting the needs of people in my local community, in my baseball community, and in my local church? And then the fourth one is maturing, which is growing. Am I spending time with God, growing in my fellowship and my faith with Him through reading, studying His word, and in prayer? And then the next one is manager, stewardship. Am I managing my time, my calendar, my gifts, my relationships, my treasure, and my temple in a God-honoring way? And then a messenger, which is sharing. Am I seeking out opportunities to share God's message of love and salvation with others, inviting someone to church, someone to a small group? How am I doing in the baseball coaches and scouts group? And then the last one is the multiplier, reproducing. Am I reproducing and multiplying more disciples with the life and time I've been given here on earth? And am I making disciples that make disciples? So that's the grid that I work from, that I believe is all those conducts, all those priorities were a priority in Jesus' life. A member, a magnifier, a minister, he was maturing, a manager, a messenger, and a multiplier. That was the conduct of Christ. And so I'm constantly trying to look at and evaluate, you know, how am I doing in these areas personally and professionally?
That's a great list. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'm curious about, you know, you deal with a lot of, you know, prospects and kids that want to make it to the show, want to play baseball for a living. How do you encourage a player to, you know, play hard, use the gifts God has given you, maximize your opportunities, but don't make baseball or your career your God? How do you help them kind of develop some wisdom there as you coach them or even give them advice?
Yeah. Well, you know, with so many of these guys nowadays, and it's rare, especially for these young players nowadays that are amateur guys, the high school kids or the college kids, when they figure it out, you know, and it's not many that do, but I never try to offer that advice unless they ask it. Mm-hmm. And so I just encourage them, look, you know, your family is important. Your time with God is important. That your time with God is the most important. And I try to share that with them. Your time with your family is a priority. That's so important. This list of baseball, at the end of the day, when you're 40 years old, it's not going to make a hill of beans difference. I try to honestly help them keep it simple and not get too bogged down in the weeds of it, that this game becomes their life. It becomes their identity. It becomes who they are, for good or bad. And so, I do try to offer them wisdom when they ask. I don't want to just lamb blast it with them, or, you know, pour it on them if it's not asked. So, but yeah, I'm constantly trying to, especially when you have a relationship, because I believe at the end of the day, ministry and anything we do is built around relationships. Mm-hmm. It is all about relationships. And if you don't have a relationship, if I don't have a relationship with a coach or an athlete, it's tough to speak into their life. You know, it really is. It's tough to speak in, because you have to earn their trust, and you have to earn their respect. And that takes time. It takes time.
Well, this is, man, this has been really helpful. Even if, you know, some of our listeners are not baseball fans, I think that they would certainly get a lot out of just the discipleship side of this. But let's talk a little bit about baseball, because you've got a new season coming up here. Everybody's optimistic at the beginning of the year. Everybody's 0-0, and so they feel like we got a shot at this thing. What are you thinking about the White Sox this year? That's your club. That's who you work with. I mean, how are you feeling? Is this a rebuilding year? Is this hey, we could maybe make a run at, making the playoffs? Or is this a, hey, we're all in and we're going to win a World Series?
Yeah, we lost 100 games last year. So whenever that happens, there always change. And it's been really good change. I wouldn't call it a rebuild. I would say maybe more retool. Mm-hmm. And, our current general manager, Chris Getz, has come in and done a wonderful job thus far and just really implementing a plan for the organization, the direction it's going, has really cast good vision. As we know, vision leaks all the time. So he's constantly, offering and challenging with vision. And so it's been really good. It's been a refresh and a retool. And I'm excited about the direction that we're going and, what all that looks like in the future.
That's great. Any players we should keep an eye on the White Sox that, they're pretty talented, but they might be under the radar?
We have a young shortstop that's coming up through our system named Colson Montgomery. That's a really good player. He's a young player. He's a high school draft, former first round pick. And he's got a chance to be a really special player. Mm. And it'll be interesting just to see how he develops and how he progresses, especially when he gets to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. There's that fine line. I was talking with a former, just another scout the other day that, we were just talking about players and, when to bring them up and when not to bring them up, because that's really important. If you bring a guy up too soon, it can impact him negatively. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, if you wait too long, it can impact him in a negative way. So there's a timing mechanism there, when to elevate the player, when to call him up, and, when to make sure that he's ready to go, and when he comes up there, he stays up there.
Mm. Yeah, it is a lot more art than science sometimes, isn't it?
Mm. Yep.
Well, listen, Kevin, this has been very encouraging, insightful, and always fun to hang out with you. And I know you're busy. You're on the road right now. You're watching players. You're getting ready for the season. A lot of your work is done in the off season, but I'm just really grateful for you spending some time with us. And I've always appreciated just the way that you carry yourself and the way that you lead. And you've always been a very big encouragement to me as well. So thank you for being a friend of the show. And I'll cheer for the White Sox as long as they're not playing my Royals. Even though we're in the same division, hey, I know what it's like to lose 100 games. So we've been there for a while. But all the best to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rusty. Have a great day.
Well, thanks so much, Kevin. We'll be back next week with brand new content. I want to thank our sponsor for being a part of the show, and I want to thank you for listening. And if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, just so you make sure you always get the new content. We're going to bump it up to some daily content coming up here in just a few weeks, so you don't want to miss any of that. So make sure you subscribe now. We'll be back next week. Can't wait to share some great intel with you then and a great guest. And we will talk to you then. And as always, keep it simple.